Perhaps you heard yesterday about the push from Narrabundah College students to stop the Indonesian language course from being scrapped in 2019. And Dan and myself were wondering aloud, how many languages have you learnt? Do they stick in your mind? And are they important for us all to learn? We spoke with Dr. George Quinn from the ANU School of Culture, History and Language about the move, and he had this to say about the drop-off of students studying Indonesian to Dan.
It's not clear, to me anyway, why there has been such a sharp decline in the number of students studying Indonesian at the advanced level. If you look at government schools in Canberra, year seven, there would be more than 400 students, at least that was the case last year, studying Indonesian in high schools in year seven. Mm. And that withers away to less than 20 in year 12. So a 95% drop.
Dr. George Quinn on Breakfast with Dan yesterday. We'd love to hear from you. Did you study a language at school? Are you doing it now? And why did you stop studying it, if in fact that happened? The answer to that question is, it's complicated, according to our next guest. Harry Opperman is retired languages faculty head and New South Wales language curriculum manager. He's based in Canberra in multicultural leadership roles as well, and he's our guest now on Breakfast. So, Harry Opperman, good to speak with you again. Languages and their knowledge of them, why are they important?
Well, they're important for a whole lot of reasons, but just before I explain, do you know that joke about what do you call someone who speaks three languages?
Go on.
They're trilingual. What do you call someone who speaks two languages? They're bilingual. What do you call someone who speaks one language? An Australian.
How true is it, though? Are we laughing because it's true in lots of ways?
No, we're laughing because it is true in lots of ways, but it's also quite sad because, unfortunately, although we've got people here from more than 200 different countries and language backgrounds, and, of course, there's all the Indigenous languages, and can I just say, if ever you want to speak to someone on Indigenous language revival and renewal, my colleague, Professor Zuckerman in the University of South Australia is doing a great job there with revival of an Indigenous language. But it's important for a whole lot of reasons for everyone. All subjects in the school curriculum are a language or a code in some way. Chemistry is a language. Physics is a language. Algebra is a language. Music is a language, and that great ABC program on bringing music to kids. You see, but because I think we're going a little bit off course in the curriculum in general with this emphasis on testing, where people think if they're doing something like music or a language, it's going to detract from their knowledge. In fact, all subjects are a language in some way, and every language the brain looks at and tries to solve develops the cognitive ability of the child. There's an international expert, Professor Fraser Mustard, who from Canada, who visits Australia regularly. His research interests are the importance of the first 3 years, and he stresses all the cognitive and intellectual benefits to children of learning a language early. But see, the problem that Dr. Quinn identified doesn't just apply to Indonesian. First of all, there are a whole lot of structural problems. Have we got enough teachers? Well, the answer is no. So if you're going to try and offer languages to the whole range of schools, we just don't have enough teachers. We haven't been training them anymore. At the university where Dr. Quinn is, languages at universities have been going down as well because of cuts to funding, and they're not as profitable.
So Harry, you're already pointing to some reasons why the drop-off in students and the staff who will be teaching these languages.
Yeah.
Does this require a rebalancing, a whole new reprioritising of language development in Australia?
Well, it's got to start with getting people who understand the problems of the structural problems, how to make languages work in the schools. Most high schools, for example, have staffing to several decimal places. So what's happening in Canberra recently is what happened in New South Wales years ago, where there's a new Academy of Languages just starting up to try and offer ACT students a language on Saturdays because they can't get it in their school curriculum. And then there's the statistic you mentioned at the start of the program with 400 students in high schools, but only 20 doing it from matriculation. But that's emulated all along, even in European languages in the ACT, where a languages high school in the ACT has 300 students in year 10, but only 30 going on with it to year 12. So So much depends on the success of the teacher and also the status of the subject, because whether we like it or not, unless the school structure and curriculum structure gives an equal importance to language as it does to maths and science and English, students are not going to perceive it as being as important. That's number one. And there's another really important factor, Adam, and that is I was involved in teacher education at three universities over many years, and one of the first things I used to ask student teachers, what are you doing? Are you teaching your subject or are you teaching children? And the answer I was looking for is, I'm teaching children to love learning through the medium of my subject. Because unless you're getting children to love learning with you and what you're doing, whatever subject it is, they're not going to want to continue. They might continue if it's compulsory because they've got no choice, but they'll be switched off. You know, the problems we're hearing about with students persevering with the STEM subjects. Mm. Well, part of the answer is in that. They're compulsory, but is what's being offered the best possible way to get student interest high enough to really want to continue on at university and matriculation with that? And the other problem in general is there's not enough coordination. There are some marvellous programs. For example, we've got some lovely community language schools in the ACT. I still go to some of the languages meetings of the ACT government, and people like the Tongan community are teaching their mother tongue to their children, and that's very important. Many people from overseas do make a mistake if they think, oh no, I've got to speak English at home, not my mother tongue, because that's going to help my child. The reverse, actually, from research is true, that if the child develops its literacy and abilities in the mother tongue, mm-hmm. it will pick up other languages quite easily. English was only the fifth language I learned to speak.
On that, what message does it send from Australia to those near neighbours? Indonesian, of course, is in the frame right now, but this we're speaking more broadly than this, aren't we? We're talking about Japanese, about Chinese even, the globally most dominant international power that is not of the English language right now. What does it say to the rest of the world about our reluctance to teach many more languages?
Well, yes, it could be, you're quite right, Dan, it could be reluctance, but, you know, everything depends on government funding.
When I talk reluctance, that's what I'm talking about, is the leadership when it comes to the curriculum, when it comes to the overarching view of our education system.
Well, one of the big initiatives under the Howard years was the National Asian Languages and Studies Scheme, and syllabuses were developed, and I was involved in some of that for students from kindergarten to year six in Chinese and in Korean and in Japanese and so on. And that was a very important funding initiative. But as Dr. Quinn said, it's not kept up. It's not constant. It tends to be a bit ad hoc without understanding what's the next step to make it work in schools.
Yeah, and that's...
And that needs money, and that needs teacher training, and that needs allowing smaller classes. With this issue at Narrabundah College, it means allowing smaller classes to continue just so the subject doesn't die out, because once it's gone, it's gone. It's very hard to bring back.
Yeah, and so what does it say, do you think, to our neighbours around the Asia-Pacific region and further afield, to be honest?
Well, Dr. Quinn mentioned intercultural competency, and that's very important. And yes, it is so important because the impression it makes when you know enough of another person's language to communicate even at an elementary level, it's a mark of respect, it's a mark of friendship. But you see, cultural knowledge is also important, and what many politicians, I guess, do not understand is the link, and I've talked about this with Adam in another context and with Laura, the link between culture, faith, language and multiculturalism. They are all linked quite in an interesting and interconnected way. So, for example, if you're in Japan and you're giving someone a present, you don't give it with your left hand, you give it with both hands. I'm talking about little aspects of cultural knowledge. And one
it's that nuance, there, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's that nuance of understanding how another person lives.
That's right. And one of the problems is, actually, that we have as an Australian society in general, we're a very casual culture. And we sometimes get it wrong with people when we're going to other countries and relating to them. Is many other countries, China and Japan that you mentioned, have up to 18 levels of formality, and we're the direct opposite. We almost have no formality left in our culture, or in the English language did away with a lot of the formal aspects. You do occasionally hear it still in relation to the royal family. So it's quite a dramatic problem, because the reality is that 90% approximately of matriculation students do not study any language other than English.
Mm. And that therein lies the challenge at the core of this entire debate. Look, thank you so much for joining us this morning. It's been a great treat to talk to you this Friday.
Thank you very much.
That was there. Well, Harry Opperman, a retired language faculty head and New South Wales language curriculum manager, on the bigger picture about this. Of course, this started as a conversation, Adam, about Indonesian language, which is obviously very important. Mm. But this goes to the heart of the way as a country we see ourselves and the image that we project to the rest of the world. There's a couple of text messages in. This one, Dr. Quinn's position is laudable. However, some realistic facts need to be addressed. One, of the 5,000 signatories, the majority were from overseas or from old students. There are single-digit enrolments for Indonesian subjects for next year, and it's just not enough to justify the resources needed to run the subject, especially when schools are struggling with funding and staffing as it is. Three, given the previous point, who will pay the school to run the subject in order that other resources within the school that the student body are using, says Ruth. But this, we've broadened it out, and this is not so much necessarily about that school, although still very concerning about at the macro level, but this is talking about the policy and what image it sends to the rest of the world.
And as Sopperman says, he's the co-chair, by the way, of the Canberra Multicultural Faith Forum, so there is a broader cultural issue or priority at heart here, and this text sort of backs this up. I'm a language teacher in the ACT government system, says this correspondent. It's compulsory for students to have language until year 8. In year 8, half my time in classes is now dealing with the terrible behaviour of students who hijack the lessons. This teacher believes it starts at home. There's a great disrespect and disregard from many families who don't support the learning of another language or culture. An interesting observation from a teacher who's in the system teaching different languages.
Yeah, that's a very concerning point. If you've got a view on this around languages and the image that we're sending to the world and where that will place us into the future, I mean, we've seen, haven't we, over the last couple of days, the Prime Minister under fire from a number of global leaders about his calls for a review of Australia's embassy in Israel. Well, that goes to that culture aspect that was just being mentioned by Harry Oppenheim around, well, the nuance of how we behave compared to other people around the world. And so do keep us sending your views into us.